Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
On 710 ESPN Seattle, this hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We got a big show coming your way, much to talk about, much to discuss and recap. Our buddy Jake Heaps will join us for the entire hour at 3 o'clock. We'll try to have, we've got one expert in Dave Wyman on the show every day, but you can never have enough experts, guys that have played at the highest level. So we're trying to do that every day at 3 o'clock. We'll see how it goes, but, you know, Jake's going to be with us every week, I believe every day following a Seahawks game. Spend an hour with us and get two experts in here and a professional question asker is how we're going to do that, Dave. How are you,
man? A very curious man.
That's right. I've got many questions, and you guys luckily have a lot of answers, so that's great. So Jake will be with us in the 3 o'clock hour, the professor John Clayton at 4. And what a perfect day to have Michael Bradley on, El Hombre, live from Philadelphia at 4:30. He and I were texting a little bit during the game last night, Dave, and then he just went dark. He just all of a sudden was gone, stopped responding.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he had something to talk about, at least his defense, that front seven, man. Oof. I couldn't tell so much if they were that good or maybe the line didn't have a great night. I thought they looked really good. So, but, yeah, there's something to shout about. But, you know, we talked to a guy last I was bringing this up on the broadcast just because it struck me funny. But last week during the huddle, we talked to a guy. His name is Ruben. I can't remember his last name, but he was a writer for NBC. And I asked him, you know, who are some of the players on the team out there in Philly that, you know, are kind of the unsung heroes? And he goes, you know, it's funny you should ask that because me and my colleagues were just coming up with a list. And we only have seven on the list, but the list was players that the fans don't hate.
That is a very short list.
And, yeah, like the long-haired linebacker, Alex Singleton. I think, you know, Montana State, he's kind of a journeyman. He was in the Canadian Football League, and now he's playing his tail off. I mean, guys like that they like, but they just can't stand, you know, most of the players on this team. But I'll tell you what, that Barnett guy, he looked good. Of course, Fletcher Cox. So,
Graham.
Yeah, maybe the El Hombre will be at least a little bit encouraged by his defense.
Yeah, we didn't get into defense over our text exchange. And like I said, he just kind of tapped out. I think his last text was a shot at Wentz. Something along the lines of he stinks or something along those lines. So we'll get deeper into that conversation with El Hombre, Michael Bradley at 4:30. But I want to go through some highlights of the game, Dave. But before that, I was asking a question in our show notes last night. And that is, I came away from this game not thinking, oh, man, what a spectacular performance. Boy, weren't they great. They did what they needed to do. You beat a team that's down, that's injured, that's playing really poorly. Ooh, that offense looks bad. And I came out of that game going, all right, I don't really know what I watched. Did I watch a dominant performance by the defense or at least a really good performance by the defense? Or was that just a really, really undermanned, pathetic offense? And I believe the answer is yes.
To both.
Yeah, I think it's both can be true. And I think in this case, and I know that sounds like riding the fence, but I think both are true. I think the defense is turning the corner and playing better. Are they great? No, they're not great, but they're definitely playing better than they were. And they were facing a team that is absolutely their old line is in a shambles. They don't have weapons, and Carson Wentz looks like a shell of his former self. I mean, the Seahawks had something to do with it, certainly. But you could see that they appear to be an inferior product.
Yeah, well, when we talked last week, and Mara brought this up, the Fulgham, however you say his name, the receiver who nobody had ever heard of, and he was like the leading pass catcher, or at least for yards. And then Greg Ward is the other target for him, for Carson Wentz, and he was a converted scout team quarterback. I mean, and we talked about that last year. And it's funny, you know, for a while there, the score was 17-9 because Rabel and I were joking that, you know, that it might, you know, end there. I think it was at halftime. It was 17-9, which is what the score was both times we went out there last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like after that playoff game, right? I mean, they didn't have Wentz and they didn't have the backup. You know, they were down to like their third string quarterback. And you just kind of came away going, did we win? You know, did we beat a team and feel like we've got some momentum? And that's why I brought up the defense. I mean, I think the front seven looked really good, and I think the fact that you were able to put some points up and at least, you know, protect Russell a little bit is saying something against that front seven. I thought they're legit. The way they're playing, I think that, you know, their D coordinator has them playing really well. It looks like really simple things that they are just allowed to turn it loose and, you know, go get them. So that part of it was. But, you know, we talked about this last week, too. What are you going to think after, you know, I was posing the question, what if you beat the Jets 21-20? Are you going to, I mean, that's a win, but are you going to think, and this was kind of similar. Now, it came at the end, it was a two-score game, and it became one with a, you know, last second, you know, Hail Mary, but still, it didn't feel like that, but I think that's kind of what we're going to get. I look for things like, can you run the ball consistently? And it looked like Carson needs maybe another game to get back. You know, he couldn't break into that second level, you know, get that next level run. Hyde looked pretty good. That was such a bogus penalty, the holding penalty on Oboye.
He did hold him, though. It was completely unnecessary.
Didn't see him hold him, though.
I mean, he compared to everything else, was it egregious? No, but was it a hold? Yeah. Does it happen every play? Probably. But yeah. it was away from where Carson was going. It was just, you know, to me, it wasn't even about should they not have called it. It was like, why did you do that? You didn't even need that.
I was talking about the Hyde run.
Yeah, the touchdown run. Right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I thought you said Carson. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've seen so much worse holding. I've seen so much worse pass interference, and really it was going both ways. But yeah, I thought that the officials had a rough night. But you know, if you can see, I mean, other than that one, I love the Carson run, you know, for the touchdown where he just bowls over everybody, including two of his blockers. But, you know, you want to see that. You want to see your defense continue. Like the thing with Bobby Wagner running down the seam. And, you know, Moyer and I talked about this last night because I thought it was cover two, because you're supposed to cover, you know, any seam route, anything that goes vertical down the field, just like he did the second to last play, or was it the third to last play in the Arizona game, where he knocked that pass away. It was the same type of thing. And now, you know, we talked about, I think it might have been man. Otherwise, he would have probably dropped him when he started to veer over to the other side. But still, he ran with him all the way and, you know, knocked it away. So those kinds of things, getting under those routes, doing those kinds of things, turning the plays back in. KJ just continues to and just impress the hell out of me. I mean, just
no, he's too old, Dave. He's lost a step.
I told you, I don't want to hear that, Bob. No, it's just those are the kinds of things that you look for to me. And you know, that's what you take away from a win like this, I think, against Philadelphia or the Giants or the Washington football team, you know, whatever it is. That's what you're gonna have to take away, and you know, and you're really not gonna know until you play the Rams. And now the Niners, you know, they went and beat the Rams. So
I was a big Niners fan yesterday.
Yeah, no kidding. That's solid performance by them, and then you know, same thing with the Patriots.
Yep.
You know,
we were all there with Mora. We were all rooting for the Patriots. Go Cam.
That's right.
Go Finally. Cam Newton, who says, I'm not going to apologize for the way I win. Which is fine. I fully respected his performance in that game. But did you, and we'll get into more of the details of this game, because I want to ask you about the O-line. And I had a little back and forth with Ray again on Twitter. But not like last time. More about, I said, you know, something about the line. He countered it. There it was. But so when you walk away and you bring up what's in front of them, you got the Giants, you got the Jets, you've got Washington. Are we going to learn anything about this team in these games? I mean, the goal is to win. This is bottom line business. Style points mean nothing. So if they win 21-20, it's a win. I'll take it. Yeah. Doesn't mean you don't see things in that game and go, man, I don't love that. Or, boy, that could have cost them against a good team. Or, you know, those moments are going to happen. But do you feel like it's impossible to answer the question, has this defense turned the corner? Because I looked at the last three games. They've allowed 23, 21, and 17 points, respectively. So each game's gone down just a little bit more. 17 points against this team. The Hail Mary makes it a little bit more deceptive. I mean, they did a nice job against a beleaguered team. But I'm looking at the schedule going, I don't am I going to be able to come to any hard and fast conclusions about, yep, defense is primed and ready. They have turned the corner, and I like them regardless of who the opponent is.
Yeah. Well, I do think you're going to be able to tell things. And the defense, really, this goes back to, I would say, the second half of the Ram game,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, that's where they gave up 115 yards, 6 points, and they started to play the edges properly. And that was the thing that was just driving me nuts, is the perimeter. They were not turning things back in. There weren't guys working together on that. That, and then also, you know, there was some problems with coverage and everything downfield. Deep crossers, for one thing, which was just a problem. And it still continues to be a little bit, but, you know, those are the things that are getting fixed. So, I mean, look, in this next few weeks, you're going to come across the same type of thing that you saw last night. The front seven for the Philadelphia Eagles. I think we all learned something about that front seven, that they're pretty dang good. That is a good front seven. They're well coached. You know, whether you like the defensive coordinator or not, because he said things about Metcalf, you know, that's to be determined. But I think he coaches them really well,
mm-hmm.
and did a great job with that. You're going to find some group of, you know, maybe not the Jets because they're 0-10 or 0-11, but, you know, you're going to find that in the Giants. You're going to find a newfound respect. And so, yeah, if you have the kind of performance and do the things that you should do, they kind of took care of Philadelphia, because you consider, okay, yeah, we've solved the whole puzzle of going east, but still you're having to go out there. You know, you haven't played together in a while. You've had lots of injuries. You've got guys coming back. And they did to them what they were supposed to do. They went out there and won the game. And really, it wasn't as clear. It really should have been 23-9 had that not, you know, the Hail Mary thing not been attempted. So, and you'd have thought, yeah, that's a pretty good win.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's, you're going out there on the road. I know it's not a great team, but you're still on the road in their home stadium. They're capable. They've got a guy who was an MVP candidate as a quarterback. They've got talent on the defensive side of things that could easily have gone the wrong way. And at times, the first quarter was atrocious in terms of the offenses for each team. That was terrible. Yeah. I mean, both teams offensively looking at them going, ugh, what is this? You know, right. So, the Seahawks found their rhythm. They found a way to get things moving after that first quarter. But I think we've come to learn they don't blow anybody out. They just don't really have comfortable wins. And this was comfortable up until the last moment for the most part. You never really felt like, ooh, they might blow this. But they didn't run away with it either. It's just, it's their nature. It's just not who they are. And when they do have a game like that, it's a rarity. If you go back and look at their schedule and look at and when they've beaten teams and when they lose, same thing. They rarely, if ever, get blown out of a game, and they don't blow teams out.
Yeah, and I just think that's – well, look, you look at the most common point spread in the NFL is 3.5 points. So, you know, I'm looking at, like, just for example, you know, I'm looking at the Saints, okay? So their first game they won 34-23, lost a couple. Then they had a 35-29 win over Detroit. Are you excited with that? You know, then, you know, they have an overtime victory over the Chargers, 30-27 at home. You know, then they win 27-24. They win 26-23 in overtime at Chicago. You know, they've blown out teams lately, like 31-3 Denver. But, you know, a lot of teams kind of go through that. I mean, they'll have those kinds of performances. You're right. I don't remember the last time that they had a 31-3, you know, just maybe we'll see that with the Jets. Maybe we'll see them come together there. So, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. They're winning. And I always am like, look, haven't been on a 2-14 team. The best record I ever had was 9-7. I know how hard it is. They're keeping it together right now with, you know, all of the testing and everything. They're doing a good job with that. So, you know, it's been pretty good. 8-3 right now looks pretty good. But, you know, they're obviously going to have to take advantage of this period of time, this stretch of games, to continue to work on, you know, playing together on defense especially, and trying to get the run game going, I think are going to be the two things that really. And what about the takeaways? They've really dried up, man. You know, they got one last night, but, you know, that's something that they haven't done. And I think that leads to blowout wins as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We'll get into all the details of this game again. We'll have Jake Heaps with us for the entire 3 o'clock hour. Want to go through some of the highlights in this game. Coming up in about 5 minutes, we'll talk about what's going on with the very latest on this Ravens-Steelers matchup. That just they're trying to make the game happen. They're trying to make this thing happen. We'll give you the latest on that. But let's start out with David Moore. And they go forth. This was interesting. They go for it on fourth down 2 times in the first quarter. We had what? We spent almost a whole show talking about them electing not to go for it on fourth and an inch and a half or 2 inches before. And Pete talking about, well, that felt panicky or that felt, you know, that's pushing it. But elects to go for it 2 different times on fourth down, and it just really didn't go well.
Carson in the backfield. The toss to David Moore is going nowhere. They tried to run that sweep again, and Barnett had penetration, one of the defensive linemen, penetration inside, and just that thing went to heck in a handbasket before it ever got started.
Heck in a handbasket, Dave. It didn't go well. And I can't remember, is that the one where when they went back on the TV copy, they played the highlight of DK Metcalf kind of missing on a block? I don't know if that was the one.
Well, it was. And I don't know that he missed on it or they just asked too much out of him. I mean, I've seen him make that block before where he chips down on like a linebacker typically or a strong safety. This was a defensive end, and you know, he didn't even budge. So, and also on that play, Ethan Posick got killed, absolutely killed on that play. And that where I thought that's where all of the penetration, you know, came from. And I'm trying to remember the guy's name. It was Hargrave. Yeah, he just marched him into the backfield. So, yeah, it was. Yeah, that play broke down. I mean, obviously you're a genius if that, you know, if they block that right. But I just don't think at that point they knew what they were up against, you know. Mm-hmm. They didn't know they were up against a defense that was just going to bring it. And Jim Schwartz is the coordinator I was talking about. Couldn't come up with his name at
former
the time.
Former Lions coach.
Yeah, exactly. He's the one who got slapped on the back by Jim Harbaugh.
Harbaugh, yeah. He didn't like that. Didn't appreciate
no, didn't like
the hand-to-hand combat going on.
And I don't blame him. But, but yeah, I mean, that was interesting because you bring up the – I still think the other one wasn't a time where you would go for it. The one against the Rams, it was a little early and you were, you know, in it. But, yeah, I mean, I think you could make the point, yeah, why not? And it was, what, at the 2-yard line? Is that where they were?
Which one are you talking about? This one?
Fourth and two at the 2-yard line. You know, my complaint is I hate plays in short yardage that go sideways.
Yeah.
I can't stand it.
Yep.
You know, unless you want to roll your quarterback out, to me, let's get downhill. I mean, you've got a fullback on your roster. You've got some big dudes like Damian Lewis who can just manhandle people. And you got a guy like Chris Carson. You know, here's the other thing. Moyer and I always complain about this. Nobody goes over the top anymore. Yeah, remember?
You mean jumping over the top of the pile as a running back?
Yes. Yeah. I remember my coach in Denver used to line me up like 8 or 9. No, it wasn't that. It was like 7 yards deep because he wanted me to get a run and go up and, you know, hit the, you know, the ball carrier diving over the pile. Because that's what they do. They just make a big pile and you'd hand it to the running back and he'd leap over. So... And, you know, sometimes you'd miss. I have a picture of in the Kingdome somebody sent me where I jumped up in the air and hit Bo Jackson just right and, you know, knocked him down. But you were kind of just, you know, flying up in the air hoping that you're going to hit something, you know. But, I mean, nobody does that anymore. So, to me, that's my short yardage complaint is that they don't, you know, let's go straight forward. You've got enough guys. You've got big physical guys to do that. Even though they have a good front seven. But, yeah, that play broke down, I thought, mostly from the inside when Posick just got blown back into the backfield.
Yeah, we'll go through some of the other highlights in the game coming up throughout the show. Right now, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
After 3 postponements due to the Ravens' COVID-19 outbreak, the Steelers-Ravens game will happen tomorrow. Because NBC wanted to honor their commitment to the Rockefeller Center tree lighting, the game will be broadcast at 12:40 p.m. Pacific time.
So 12:40 our time, 3:40 East Coast time. hopefully, fingers crossed, this game will happen. I mean, it looked like the Ravens were going to have no players available. Steelers have had their own problems with COVID tests coming up positive and, you know, went from one day to the next day to the next. It keeps, it's going to be a Friday night game before we know it. But right now, scheduled to happen tomorrow. Interesting that NBC, saying they want to honor their commitment. I wonder if they had the opportunity to opt out of that or if they were contractually locked into it. Because it seems, you know, with all due respect to the tree lighting, I would assume the ratings win would be the Steelers-Ravens game.
I wonder.
Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm overestimating the draw of this matchup. But, yeah, I saw that and I'm going, they must be, you know, legally obligated to air this or something. Yeah. Maybe they just don't have an out.
Well, and to me, I kind of like this, that they're doing this. I mean, look, obviously you want it to go smoothly and everything to go on schedule. And, you know, football is so ritualistic when it comes to the planning and what days you do things. And this is the national day off in the NFL, Tuesday. You know, I mean, everything is very regimented. And yet they're able to – and I heard, like, Mark Ingram might fly there tomorrow or something.
Yeah, him and one other player that's part of that.
That he's gonna fly in. So I just like that they're being, I guess I'm using the word nimble about it, in that they're able to just, you know, make last second changes and make this thing go off on time. Because you think down the road, I mean, what if this happens during the playoffs? You know, what if it's before the Super Bowl? You know, I mean,
yeah.
you like to think that you get that far, they're gonna do whatever they can to, you know, even if they have to move it. I mean, what if we have a Super Bowl on a Tuesday?
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be weird, but I mean, it could happen with the way things are going right now. I just like that they're trying to work as hard as they can to get it in.
UW overcame a 21-point halftime deficit to beat Utah 24-21 last weekend. They are set to host Stanford this Saturday, but Stanford is attempting to relocate for practice this week after a revised health order from Santa Clara County placed a temporary ban on all sports.
Yeah, so Stanford being disrupted there. UW, I watched that game. It was, you know, you're watching that initially going, ugh, goodness, what is going on with this Husky team? They finally found an opponent. You know, they were trying for BYU. They get Utah to play, and you know, you're wondering, all right, is there just not enough time to scout your opposition? What's going on here? And then showing a ton of heart to come back in that game the way they did, where they just kind of looked out of it, looked a little disoriented. It was just kind of a jagged game and figured out a way to win.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought good coaching job because, look, there was a running team 2-1, and they only ran 26 times for 88 yards, and they adapted and started throwing the ball. So threw for 272 yards, able to come back and get the win there. Yeah, I heard about the whole thing. The Niners are going through that same thing,
yep,
down in Santa Clara County, that you know, they're not able to practice there. So, and in Stanford, you know, they're in, I guess, in the same county, same restrictions. So
yeah,
it'll be good though that they're. I think there's more Pac-12 college football games than I would have thought. In the very beginning, I thought, oh, there's no way they're going to do this. They're not going to get this done. And, you know, you got Washington 3-0. They're heading into their fourth game.
All right, coming up, it's time for the roses portion of our Roses and Thorns segment. And could this be the week the defense gets more love than the offense? We'll see. That's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Now, it's Roses.
Every you accept this for us.
My wife is blowing kisses at you right now.
That's awesome.
Always popular with the ladies, roses.
Yes. Yeah.
Ladies love the bros.
Yeah.
And thorns.
Super fun play to make the open field tackle against a guy like that. It was definitely impressive, and I have not lost a step. Appreciate that, Dave.
All right, time to hand out some roses.
You like that?
No.
Like that, Bob?
I don't like the third person. You know that.
You should have seen his face.
The ladies love the gras. I loved it.
I know you do. Third person is just the weirdest thing for anybody to go into. It makes no
Dave
sense.
Dave loves it, Bob.
Dave does not like it. It makes Bob very uncomfortable. See how weird that is?
Groz and I had some good laughs.
I'm sure you did.
We had some good laughs.
He's a man of many laughs, the Groz.
Yes, he is.
All right, let's start with roses. And To me, there are some obvious candidates. Let's start with you, Dave. Go ahead. You go first.
Okay. I think you guys saw my my email, my burning question. Did we put this in here anywhere?
I don't know.
I don't think we did.
We're going to talk to Jake about it a little bit.
We'll talk to Jake about it. Okay. What in the world does DK Metcalf say? Because I have never seen three more furious players than Dre Kirkpatrick, Stephon Gilmore, and now Darius Slay. What does he say to them? Because those guys, all of them were out of control. I mean, that battle with Stephon Gilmore, I don't know if it showed up on the copy because, of course, nobody was at the stadium. And, I mean, it went all the way over to the bench. And he was Stephon Gilmore was so angry. And this is a defensive player of the year. And then, you know, the same thing with Slay and the same thing with Kirkpatrick. And I don't know if Stephon Gilmore got a penalty, but the other two did. So whatever DK is saying, the reason why I'm bringing it up is because I'm giving him my rose. Was that a Monday Night Football record, did they say?
In terms of what, yardage?
Yardage?
I don't know if it was a record or not. I don't recall seeing that. It could be. I didn't remember seeing that, though.
I thought I heard that somewhere. But, to me, DK, and he gets, you know, manned up with Darius Slay. So, you know, I guess they thought they were going to do the Jalen Ramsey thing on him. And you know what it made me think about, guys, is I cannot wait for the next matchup with him and Jalen Ramsey.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is going to be fantastic. You know, and I don't know if later on we're giving Rose petals or not. Are we?
Sure. Because, go ahead.
Yeah, because KJ Wright has just been fantastic. I mean, nothing like super spectacular, but that one stiff arm, he got stiff armed and his helmet goes back and he just hung on to the guy for dear life. I mean, he just played so well and does so many things. So that would be my pedal, but definitely, you know, 10 catches on 13 targets for 177 yards. It's too bad DK didn't have a touchdown, but you know, he had a pretty good game, you know, against Philly last year when they went out there. Remember that third down that they clenched in the playoffs? So yeah, I thought DK just, but mostly it was like, man, I wonder how does he get that far under guys' skin? I've never seen like bigger fights and guys more furious, like I said, than you've seen with Slay, Kirkpatrick, and Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah, I tweeted out last night, he's the new Breno Giacomini. He's out there where Breno used to be a liability. Remember, he would be the one incurring the penalties, and you'd sit there and get so frustrated with him, and then eventually he became Bill Laimbeer on a football field. Yeah. He was the guy that would get under people's skin and force them to take a shot at him or do something that would draw the penalty, and he was the king of that. And DK, very early in his career, is becoming that guy. Now, there have been a couple moments I'm like, oh, man, is he going to get ejected? Is he going to get a flag? Because he's certainly not just chirping. He's getting physical with them and, you know, sort of retaliating. And he's got the attitude, I'm not taking any guff off any of these guys. I don't care who they are, which I love. I just love that he'll talk it, he'll walk it, he's all about it. He's handling his business. So I'm with you. How do you not give him the give him a rose, 10 catches, 177 yards. The only downside was the drop in the end zone. I mean, he makes the spectacular one-handed catch down the sideline where Slay had beautiful cover. I mean, he couldn't have been in a better position unless he was inside of his jersey. He couldn't have been in a better position, and he makes that catch. And then the one where it just hits him right in the numbers, he drops it. You know, so that was the one downside to his night. But a tremendous night. I'd give a pedal to Jamal Adams. Jamal Adams is a different player, Dave. He's just special. He just is. Does he make every single play? No. Is he the greatest in coverage? No, I don't think he's near the liability people try to portray him as being, though, in coverage by any stretch. But he's just the energy, the attitude. I mean, he's exciting. You just look at him. He's almost like a baseball player. You look forward to their time up at the plate. Like, when is Griffey up? When's he up? Okay, I got to make sure I'm in front of the TV when he's up. That's how I feel about Jamal Adams. Where's he at on the field? Okay, I'm watching what he's doing. My eyes just sort of are drawn to him because he's so active. He is so animated. He is so intense. And I'm sitting there watching him just lay hits on people going, Dave Wyman has to love this guy because he exudes love of football. Like he just is football. He just, every moment is precious to him out there. That's how he plays. He's excited on every play, every tackle. He's talking, he's animated. Another sack last night, two quarterback hits, led the team in tackles. He's a great player.
One thing made me mad, though. He had a coverage thing where he just wasn't on it. And before I was saying, look, I don't understand what all this talk is about him and his coverage. And I don't care what Pro Football Focus says. You know, there was one time I saw, and actually I think I heard him mention it. He goes, yeah, Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
I saw that play, and it's like, yeah, he jammed him, he ran with him, he totally covered him, and then he just dropped him. It was like he had a brain fart or something. I mean, it wasn't to me about anything about his ability. And then last night he had a play where I feel like sometimes he is almost too distracted at looking at other things. Like he's trying to see everything on the football field. And I feel like sometimes he kind of forgets what's right in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing I'd say about him is that people are going to criticize him for either a missed tackle or things like that. Other players wouldn't get there. I mean, he was like 5 yards outside the offensive tackle and I think 2 or 3 yards off the ball, and he pressured Carson Wentz. I mean, nobody gets there from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care. I don't know how fast he runs a 40. I have no idea, and I really don't care, because whatever that is, he plays way faster. He just covers so much ground. So
he's just a difference maker. He just seems to really be on a different level, man. I love watching that guy play. I'm just drawn to watching him play. And by the way, with that sack, he's got 6.5 on the season. That ties his career high from last year of 6.5. So he's matched his career high with 5 games to go, 6.5 sacks.
Yeah, so. And so let's see. They got 6 last night, so they're at 31. 31 sacks.
Yeah, so they've already exceeded last year with 5 to go, 5 games to go.
And I think that's 22 now in the last 5 games that they've gotten. So,
all right,
extravaganza, baby.
Well, coming up, it is time for thorns, and we know the officials certainly deserve one, but who else is going to receive a thorn? You'll hear next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, our buddy Jake Heaps will join us for the hour, 3 o'clock hour. So get his insight as well as Dave Wyman, a couple of experts and a guy who asks questions coming up at 3 o'clock. But people are pointing out, is before we move into thorns, Dave, when I was talking about Jamal Adams matching his sack total of last year, 6.5, pointing out the obvious that he's missed, what, three games or 4 games?
Yeah, it was like, shoot,
is it 3?
Well, I believe it's 3.
Is it 3? I mean,
I thought it was 4.
Yeah, I'll look for sure. But, I mean, just the idea, he's missed a handful of games already with 5 to go, and he's already matched last year's total, which is a career high of 6.5 sacks. So, good on the texters that pointed that out.
Yeah, so, I mean, and he missed, what, 2 3/4? Oh, he played 2 3/4 of, the first 3 games. Dallas is where he got hurt.
Four games.
Was he back for San Francisco?
I'm looking at his game log right
now. No, he wasn't back.
No,
I'm thinking 5 because there was a bye week in there.
Yeah.
He came back against Buffalo, so, yeah 4 games.
He's played 7 games. 6.5 sacks.
Yeah, about
awesome.
That.
Awesome. All right, let's move on to thorns here, Dave. It's, always feels weird to give out thorns after a win, especially a road win. And I know it was the Eagles. I get it. But still a win. They're 8-3. Sole possession of first place in the NFC West. So now it's time for you to be negative, Dave.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess I expected a little bit more out of Cedric Aboye. I don't know why. I mean, he was a first-round draft choice. He spent time in Jacksonville, Cincinnati. I watched him out at camp, and I was like, wow, he moves around like a much smaller person. I thought very athletic. But, it wasn't so much the hold. And that wasn't necessary. I looked at that a number of times during the break just now. I think that linebacker tripped himself, and that made it worse. He went to take a step, and it was like the ground wasn't where he thought it would be, but maybe it was because of the way he was holding him. I don't know. Mm. But, you know, to say, well, that was an unnecessary block, he doesn't know where the ball carrier is. So, you know, every block's necessary when your back is to the running back and you don't know where it is, where he is. You're just thinking, hey, I'm going to get my guy. I'm going to assume that this guy's going to make the tackle. So I don't fault him, I guess, so much for that. But he got blown back one time on a running play, and he went right into Hyde's legs. And you could see Hyde just kind of slapped the ball like he was already planning his next move
right
downfield to make a cut. So I guess if I'm going to give it to a player, I would give it to him. But, you know, it also brings to light, you know, how good Brandon Schell has been.
It's been great.
Yeah, and, you know, and what he means to that defense. I'd say maybe a little thorn nub to Ethan Posick for just getting destroyed on that fourth down.
Got trucked. You just hit on what my thorn was going to be, which was the whole line. I don't know what's going on, and I've been giving them heaps and heaps of praise this year. I think they've been great. They've dealt with every injury, every replacement seamlessly. The last couple of games, it feels like they've had issues, and that's not to take anything away from Philadelphia, who appears to be a very good front seven. But man, they just, even when they were rushing four, it wasn't like they're bringing the blitz and they're getting that exotic with what they were doing. It just seems like they were being overpowered or at times just missing their assignments. Perhaps, you know, you got two guys blocking one guy, here comes a guy free. And in the run game, I saw it. Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde had a couple of nice runs, a 16-yarder for Carson, an 8-yarder for Carlos Hyde. But, man, there were very few moments where you looked at it and said, whoa, gaping hole, nice job by the line. I mean, they were creating their own success, the running game was, in my opinion. I just didn't think they did a really good job of run blocking or pass blocking, for that matter. And it stems back to the last couple of games, and I'm wondering if the injuries are catching up with them a bit, you know, because Yapati's been in and out of there. Now, boy, he was in there with Schell out of there. You know, Posick was out. You know, they've dealt with a rotating door, so I'm – you know, obviously that's got to be part of what's going on there, because they've been really, really solid, more reliable and consistent than they've been in years. But the last couple of games, I feel like they've taken a step back a bit.
Yeah, 10 tackles for loss last night and then 7 quarterback hits. Do you remember a time where Russ didn't have to move around the pocket?
And that's what we were talking about in the beginning of the year, right? That he had all day. Felt like Russ could sit back there and just, you know, kick back, make a sandwich, wait for somebody to get open. I mean, it was amazing how often it looked like he was going, well, that guy's not open. All right, progression goes number two. All right, let me look at number three. It just felt like he had all day. And recently that hasn't been the case.
Yeah, it was good. Again, a good front seven, Philadelphia. And I'm chalking it up, you know, at least partly to that. But, you know, you could also say, as you mentioned, I mean, their offensive line, they're moving tackles to guard and, you know, guys that have never played outside before. I mean, they had a much worse time than the Seahawks did as far as injuries go. But
what do you think of their run blocking? Because we had talked earlier in the year about, well, they just haven't really run the ball enough for us to get a really clear picture of how good or bad the team is at run blocking. Last night, 31 pass attempts. 30 rushing attempts. I mean, that's about as 50-50 as you're going to get. And so they committed to it. They gave it an opportunity, but they had a total of 76 yards, average of 2.5 yards per carry in total. So I don't know that they're a great run-blocking team, but again, injuries are a big part of it, and of course the defense is as well. But I'm starting to feel like, all right, you know, they were tremendous in pass-blocking to start the year, and maybe run-blocking is not their forte.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was, again, good front seven. We'll see how they do going forward here. I think it also, and we kind of had this discussion, I don't know what you had with Ray, but before the game, we talked, you know, Rabel and I go on and do a hit with the pregame guys. And, you know, I said, look, I think it's 75% on the running backs. I mean, the offensive line, you can, you know, blow a huge hole in the defensive line, but if the running back doesn't see it or is not hitting it on time, you know. So I thought Carson just looks like he needs to take another step. Mm-hmm. And I know Jake pointed this out too. You saw him actually use discretion. He stepped out of bounds on a play where he could have usually, you know, gone and put his head down. And I noticed that. And he's told us about that before. He's told us, hey, you know, I need to start to preserve my body a little bit. Sometimes don't be hunting somebody down unnecessarily. I mean, I remember last year in Atlanta, he tried to run somebody over who was 3 yards deep in the end zone.
Right.
So, yeah, you got to maybe cool that down a little bit, Chris, just to take care of your body. But yeah, I mean, it's on those guys. And I just felt like maybe Chris needed maybe another game to get going. His longest run was 16.
Yeah, that and touchdown run was impressive, but that was all him.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, my goodness, look at the parting of the – it's the Red Sea here, and boom, he's just running right through. He just wouldn't be denied.
You know what's funny is, you know, I always say it's not the Matrix, but, you know, when he runs the ball, sometimes it's the Matrix out there.
Yeah.
Like, he is, like, able to squirm and weave his body to stay off the ground. Like, he defies gravity somehow.
But right.
Pretty impressive. We'll see how he does next week. But, yeah, that was a tough front seven with a couple of guys in there that they didn't have, weren't familiar with. So, Posick's first game back from his concussion that lasted a couple of weeks, I guess. So
the thing we'll tweeted quickly, I just said, hey, this O-line, it was the start of the second half, and they I think they went three and out, or the first opening drive wasn't good for the Seahawks. I said, not the way you wanted to start this half. This O-line's been very good for the majority of the season. Tonight they're having some issues in pass protection. And Ray said, the wide receivers have been locked up on some of those pressures and sacks, got to get the ball out, screens, slants, et cetera. Yeah. That's as far as the back and forth went, which, you know, maybe that's true on some of them. Some of them it was pretty immediate, like there was pressure right there, or when they handed the ball off, there were guys in the backfield immediately. So I'm not sure if that's applicable there. But just overall, they're just not where they were earlier in the season. But again, they're dealing with some rotating faces there.
Yeah. Yep.
So well, there you go.
Yeah. It's going to be tough over the next few weeks to, you know, how we evaluate these wins, you know.
Yeah.
I saw people like, hey, man, I think it was Danny. Danny was saying, yeah, they did what they should to a team. And I'm not going to, you know, sit there and complain and nitpick over how they won, just that they won.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, DK Metcalf said he was fueled by what he considered a slight from Eagles coach Jim Schwartz before the game. So we'll discuss his big night, the chip on his shoulder, everything that's going on with his team. Jake Heaps is going to be with us for the next hour. That's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.